Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. I haven't done many battle or war videos, and yet it's the kind of stuff that I really enjoy. I find it fascinating. I've got tons of material. I think the only one that I've done in detail is the Battle of Blood River. And then I've done a video about the Battle of France. And I also mentioned a guy called Hermann Balk, a German who was an excellent operational level commander. That man was so outnumbered and still he was kicking ass. So battles and warfare are things I'd like to do more videos on. And I want to see if people enjoy it as much as I do. Some of the stuff that I have to do is to do with race war, because race war is going to affect all of us, and we need to tackle the topics of race war and see how things actually work. Because I see that those of you who live in America and Europe, you think that race war is going to be something that you can't win. But I'm going to show you what we whites did here in Africa, and you're going to see that you're more than capable of winning, and you can take your countries back. I truly believe that white men need to take back the entire Western world, and you don't have to ask anyone's permission. We must just do it. The Western world belongs to the white man, and the white man must take it back. End of story. No further discussion. And it would be really cool if we could get South Africa back in the orbit of whites as well. So what we're going to do today is we're going to touch on probably the first battle or set of battles that I've ever done on Rhodesia. But the reason we're going to do it is because we're going to take a look at an American hero, a guy who came to Africa, fought alongside the whites here. And when the war was over in Rhodesia, he went to South Africa, and he fought for South Africa. But he died when he was in South Africa. He died in an accident. And nobody seems to have remembered this guy. And his name is Captain John Murphy. So today we're going to have a look at Captain John Murphy and what he got up to. There were other whites who also came to Africa to help. And there were, in fact, a bunch of French who came to Rhodesia. And the French actually, sometimes when whites come from different countries to help others, sometimes it doesn't work out that well. It's got to do with the politics and the culture. There are reasons why it doesn't work. And it has to do, in the case of Rhodesia, with the political sensitivity of the stuff. Because Rhodesia and South Africa were trying their level best to not really go all out and fight all the blacks. They were doing their utmost to keep this in a limited space. South Africa went to tremendous lengths to do the same thing. Nobody will tell you this, but I've picked up on these things from reading the military texts and from also talking to people and just observing what exactly went on. South Africa bent over backwards to not turn this into a huge race war. So in the case of the French, when the French came, the French just wanted to go and blow the blacks away. But the Rhodesians, being less than 5% of the population, being down to 4% of the population, they tried to keep the blacks on their side. And we tried to do it because of the economics. You'll see that the economics and politics are screwing it up for whites. These are deeper topics and I'll get back to them. But today I want to talk about Murphy. There were guys from America, ex-Vietnam veterans and others who came to Africa. And they came initially thinking they would be mercenaries. But the whites in Africa did not allow mercenaries. And what they did was they said to the guys, look, if you want to come and fight with us, you come and join our army, and you be among our guys. You'll get paid like they get paid. There's no mercenary money, but you'll be in our army, and you know, you'll be able to function like a Rhodesian soldier or a South African soldier. There's also no photograph that I know of Captain John Murphy, but I popped off an email to some Rhodesians to see if I can get any more data about either him or any other Americans who were here. There were quite a few in Southern Africa. I know of at least another three from Rhodesia. But inside Rhodesia and inside South Africa, we've forgotten about these people. But these were whites who came from across the ocean to come and help us. Their governments weren't going to help us, but they were willing to join in our fight. And that's really awesome. And this is how it should be in the future. We white guys shouldn't be fighting each other. We should be working for Western civilization and for what's good for all of us. And even those of us in Southern Africa, if there should be wars that break out in America and Europe, we should actually be jumping on planes to come and join you guys and assist you. Absolutely. I firmly believe in that. So, Captain John Murphy, we're going to take a look at the role that he played because he did something unique as well. And that is that when these guys joined our armies, they moved through the ranks like any other white soldier. But in the case of Murphy, Murphy is the only guy that I know of who actually reached a rank where they put him in command of an external operation that was going out of Rhodesia. And in that sense, he must be the highest ranking American in any of our armies that I know of that went to fight. And you're going to see some of the stuff that Murphy got up to. So this guy, American from the Vietnam War, now he's in Africa, whole different ball game. And things are different because our military is much smaller. We don't have the kinds of weapons that Americans had in Vietnam. And he's got to adapt to our limitations. And he does so. And he does an excellent job, actually. So hopefully one day in the future, here in Africa and in America, there should be statues to Captain John Murphy. And let's hope we can get Rhodesia back one day. But we whites, we need to take our territory back. So let me just give you some background in order that you can understand what is going on with Murphy. So this is a map of Rhodesia from the time of the war. Now, the only country that was left towards the end of that time was South Africa, RSA, which you see down near the bottom. Let me get my laser pointer. There on the bottom, this is our only connection to a white country. Botswana is black. Zambia is black. Mozambique has fallen. Mozambique belonged to the Portuguese. It's fallen. It's gone. Now terrorists are entering Rhodesia from every side. Terrorists started originally from Zambia coming into here. Lake Kariba helped to make it more difficult. But when the Portuguese were knocked out, and we'll get back to the topic of the Portuguese, this entire country here suddenly became a battle zone for Rhodesia. And you'll see Rhodesia split up into these areas, Hurricane, Splinter, Grapple, and you'll see dates. These are the dates at which the Rhodesian army started cutting up the country and started functioning in those areas. And these were called operational areas. So Hurricane was the first one back in 1972. But you can see over here on the Mozambique side, you can see Thrasher, 1976, Repulse, 1976. So where Murphy plays a role is here in Repulse. He's going to be fighting from Rhodesia into Mozambique. He's going to invade a black country. Now, the blacks didn't fight us with sticks and stones and spears. The blacks were armed by the Russians and Chinese. So here you can see Zandla. Zandla operated mostly from Mozambique later. And you can see Zandla guys. And you can see them carrying all their Soviet weaponry. They've got machine guns. They've got everything. The blacks basically in Africa mostly walked and formed columns. They didn't really use vehicles in their fight. They operated in the rural areas, and so they had various other blacks assist them. But this will give you an idea of how they moved through the African bush. Let's take a look at some of the Rhodesian vehicles quickly. This thing that you see in front of you, this is actually a German armored car, but Rhodesians stole the plans for this thing, and they went and created their own versions of this German armored car. It's a UR416. And so this is one of the Rhodesian interpretations of that armored car. And these armored cars, sometimes they were also known as pigs, and the soldiers also gave these things some humorous names. They also referred to this vehicle as Hot Lips. And the reason they came up with Hot Lips is you see the slope of the armor in the front, and it comes to quite a sharp point. That is because when this vehicle drove through the African bush, it was good at cutting down vegetation. So the Rhodesian guys called it Hot Lips. And on top, you can see machine guns. So these vehicles, this German design, nice, simple design, and Rhodesians could build it. And using this simple design vehicle, these vehicles were extremely useful, especially when we started raiding into black countries. This is an Alouette helicopter gunship. You can see over here, you can see the machine gun. There's the machine gun, double-barreled, twin-barrel machine gun. These helicopters in southern Africa, for South Africa, Southwest Africa, etc., these helicopters were extremely useful. These things were our lifesavers. Without these things, we were screwed. In Rhodesia, because of their heavy bush, we couldn't really use armored cars and things with any effect. So these helicopters were the only thing that we had that was like a heavy weapon that we could use. These things alone saved our lives, like you cannot believe. These are French. These are actually civilian helicopters. And these things were modified by us for use in warfare. And boy, did these civilian helicopters work well for us. They were fantastic. So these are known as Alouette gunships. And South Africa used them as well. But South Africa also had the ability to use land vehicles in their zones of combat. This plane that you see here is a Canberra bomber, one of the first British jet planes. By the time we had it, it was really pretty out of date. But this was our heaviest bomber. This was our only real heavy bomber. And these things were very, very useful. They were fragile, but they were very useful. This is a Hawker Hunter of the Rhodesian Air Force. This was the most advanced weapon that we had. It was also a British jet. It couldn't even do faster than the speed of sound, except in a dive. These were used as ground attack aircraft. This was the heaviest weaponry we had. This was also the fastest plane that we had. These planes were unbelievable. But as with everything, resources were low. We could only use these things when we really, really needed to. In these race wars, I will show you other developments, and you're going to see some astounding things that whites did in Africa. And we're also going to talk about the Portuguese next. So then you're going to start to see what is race war actually like when whites and blacks fight each other. So, when the whites are now on their way to raid into a neighboring African country, they did this kind of thing. And this was, the Rhodesians referred to this as a flying column. And they would get their vehicles together, and a lot of those vehicles that you see there are Rhodesian invented, hacked together vehicles. And you can see the troops on them. In the front here, on the front bottom left, is actually one of those pig armored cars. But this will give you an idea of this column. They're going to go through the bush. They also have got to watch out for landmines and things. And they got to now basically break across the border, sneak into a black country, get onto some roads, and then head out and go and attack the places they want to attack. So here you can see Mozambique. This is the country that used to belong to the Portuguese. There's Mozambique. You can see long, big country, and it's bordering on Rhodesia. And Captain John Murphy is going to command the column that is going to raid into Mozambique. He's going to raid all the way through to Mapai and on to Mabalan. And he's going to be active there. So the operation that we're going to look at is called Operation Aztec, and it took place from the 28th of May 1977 to the 2nd of June 1977. So it was 5 days, white guys raiding into Mozambique and attacking the blacks for 5 days, and they're going to come back, and then you're going to see what has happened. Here is another map of Operation Aztec, and on this map you can see Villa Salazar, which is like the border post, and you can see the red, which is the railway line. And Rhodesia is going to raid into here because the Rhodesians want to smash the blacks and stop them from getting other blacks to come into the country. We basically want to smash up their ability to raid, to send terrorists into the country, because they're constantly sending terrorists and we're fighting guerrilla battles all over the show. So the whites are trying to hit them hard and reduce their ability to send terrorists into Rhodesia. They're constantly attacking, but they're attacking in small groups and guerrilla teams. But they're coming from all over the show. So the whites want to try and screw it up for them. And you can see the railway line goes down to George de Limpopo and Mapai and Mabalan. And this is where Captain John Murphy is going to be very busy. Now, the way that we're going to look at this particular campaign is we're going to look at it totally from an American point of view. In the early 1980s, when the war was over, there were two American Marine officers, I think they were of the rank of major, and they wrote a detailed paper on the Rhodesian War. And in this detailed paper, they looked at various tactics and strategies and things, and they pulled out this Operation Aztec from 1977, as one of their examples that they studied. But it's a very detailed paper written by majors in the U.S. Marine Corps. And so it's the view of the American military of how did the war go. And to just give you the background, these American military officers concluded that in Rhodesia, we won tactically, but we lost strategically. And that is actually the same thing that happened to the Germans in World War II. Same thing. They win tactically at a tactical level. They're excellent. but eventually they just get worn out because they have so many enemies and there's no assistance. They eventually, no matter how much they try, they can't survive. Ultimately, South Africa was heading down the same path, but the South Africans tried to cut it short by cutting deals with the blacks. Anyway, let's take a look at this thing from the American point of view, because these are military officers and they give their views on it. And generally, their views of the Rhodesian Army and the Rhodesian Air Force was actually excellent. They really praised our tiny little army. So, I'm going to be reading from this document produced by these Americans. And this was used at a symposium in America. So here's what they write. Operation Aztec, May to June 1977. This operation is examined because it illustrates the impact of the international community's economic sanctions upon Salisbury's ability to wage war, Salisbury being the capital of Rhodesia, and the manner in which Rhodesia compensated for this liability. In addition, the commander of the principal combat element was Captain John Murphy, Rhodesian Army. Captain Murphy was an American citizen who had served as a first lieutenant with the U.S. Marine Corps 1st Reconnaissance Battalion in the Republic of Vietnam in 1969. He was released from active duty in 1971 and attended graduate school at the University of South Carolina. He was commissioned an officer in the Rhodesian Army in 1975 and served until 1979. That's when the war ended in Rhodesia. He was commissioned in the South African Defense Force in 1980 and died in a parachuting accident with the SADF in 1981. So that is Captain John Murphy, an American. And he was clearly a very dedicated guy coming to help us. And it's sad that he died in this parachuting accident. So he actually fought in Rhodesia and South Africa. So let's take a look at this. In May of 1977, it became apparent to the Rhodesian security forces that they did not possess the depth required to stop or reduce the infiltration of insurgent forces from Mozambique into the southeastern Repulse operational area. It was decided that a major attack against Zandla guerrillas in Mozambique was required. Before the operation was completed in June of 1977, a total of 700 Rhodesian soldiers would have crossed the border and participated in action against Zandla insurgents and Frelimo forces. Let me give you a little bit of background here. In this war, the Rhodesians initially just fought the blacks in the groups as the blacks came in groups into the country. But as time went by, the whites started to discover that this way of fighting these tiny little groups that are coming in, teams of 10, teams of 20, teams of 30, that this is actually very expensive and it wastes a lot of time. However, the Rhodesians, like the South Africans, had to be very careful because there was world condemnation of anything that we did outside of our own country. So these blacks are sitting in neighboring black states, and they are being armed. There are thousands of them. They're getting weapons. They're getting training. And then they just cross the border into Rhodesia and they start attacking the farmers and planting landmines and causing mayhem. They did the same in South Africa. They did the same in Namibia. They did the same to the Portuguese. So what you had in these liberation wars was black countries hosting black terrorists. And those countries were bordering you and the black terrorists could come into your country, attack you, kill your people, and then run back to safety in the neighboring black state. And the black states didn't see anything wrong with this, and neither did the whole world. So they can come into a white-run country, attack and do as they please, and then they can run for safety back across the border, and all is well. And the whites got irritated by this as it carried on year after year. And eventually what the whites did was, unknowingly, the whites began to practice the same type of warfare that the ancient Greeks and Europeans used, which is, let's call it the big battle. Instead of small battles, you go for the big battle. And they began experimenting with this, and it started delivering really big results. I'll bet you that not one of the Rhodesian officers ever went and read a book on ancient history and said, oh, you know, maybe we should do it like the Greeks. They didn't do that. Just through normal logical deduction, they came to the conclusion that this might be a better way to fight. And they discovered that it works. It works like a bomb. And it's one of the very important conclusions that comes out of these wars in southern Africa. And Rhodesia started practicing this in a big way in its final years. And this is going to be one of those operations. But in this operation, the goal is not to kill large numbers of blacks. There are much bigger battles where that is the goal. In this case, the goal is actually to break down black infrastructure, which is also very important. So these terms that they're using here, Zandla was Mugabe's terrorist army, trained by the Chinese, and they were in Mozambique. Frelimo are the army of the communist black government of Mozambique. So when we go to hit these blacks from Rhodesia, who are sitting in Mozambique, these communist blacks, we might also have to fight Frelimo, who are the government forces. And these kinds of battles took place quite a lot. So here goes. The operation commenced on the border at Gona Rizal. The 2nd Battalion Rhodesia Regiment pushed approximately 10 kilometers into Mozambique to strike at a Zandla staging camp in order to create a diversion. At the same time, a commando company from the Rhodesian Light Infantry would conduct a heli-borne assault on a Zandla installation at Rio, while a second commando would conduct an airborne assault on a Zandla base camp at Madulopan. So the Rhodesian army is coming in and they're hitting a couple of places all at the same time. This is like the beginnings of conventional warfare, the kind of warfare that whites are used to. And this kind of warfare is actually working. It's working for the whites. Even though their budgets are small, their army is small, this stuff is actually working. It's working damned well. The commando companies would secure strong points at these locations. Once this was accomplished, a flying column, those vehicles that I showed you, a flying column under the operational control of Captain John Murphy would enter Mozambique and follow the railway line as far as George de Limpopo, destroying all the Zandla camps and installations along the route. Elements of the flying column would also move west to Mapai to destroy Zandla camps in the area. The Rhodesian Air Force would be used only in the event of an emergency. So his commanding officer, Lieutenant Colonel Daly, said this to the American Captain John Murphy. I made it crystal clear he could likely be in for a stickier time than he had ever dreamed possible while serving with his old outfit, the very fine U.S. Marine Corps in Vietnam. There would be nothing to parallel the instant and massive air support he would have had there if he got into difficulties. He would be almost completely on his own. There would be sparing support on call of two old Hawker Hunter fighter bombers, but he would only be permitted them if his difficulties were in the extreme. So let me pause there. This is the kind of stuff that really made all of us struggle in Southern Africa, was that every time we went to hit these blacks across the border in a black country, the United Nations, the USA, everybody would suddenly jump on our cases. So we want to go and pound these blacks because they're a damn nuisance and they are busy fighting against us continuously. But the moment we do that, then everybody comes down on us. And they also come down on South Africa, and they start using economic and financial and trading things to try and make life miserable for the whites. As it was, Rhodesia was under sanctions and couldn't get stuff, but they'd also go and twist South Africa's arm. So basically, Reed Daly is telling John Murphy that you're on your own. You're going to have to do all the fighting on the ground yourself, and only if you are in dire, dire trouble, sort of life and death, can we then bring in Hawker Hunters to come and fight on the ground and attack the blacks. So he's going to have a much harder time. There's no American Air Force that's just going to be swarming all over the place like it does for American troops in Vietnam and elsewhere. And then the Americans continue. They say the principal reason for this reluctance to use air support was not political, it was economic. Okay, so there they are saying the opposite of what I'm saying. But there was political stuff too. However, they're also right. Rhodesia's short of money and everything. It was economic. Rhodesia lacked the foreign exchange required to buy ammunition and spare parts for the aircraft. They remained the government's most valuable asset and would not be used until absolutely necessary. And absolutely necessary became quite common. The flying column for Operation Aztec consisted of 110 men, task organized into a combat element, supported by an organic 81mm mortar group or platoon. So Captain John Murphy is going to be commanding 110 white guys. The unit was outfitted in Frelimo uniforms, and the trucks were painted in Frelimo patterns. So let me just pause there. Let me just repeat that. The unit was outfitted in Frelimo uniforms, and the trucks were painted in Frelimo patterns. So as these vehicles move into Mozambique, they're actually going to look like Frelimo army moving around. Meanwhile, it's the whites sneaking around in a black country. On May 28th, the operation commenced. After heavy fighting, the commando units secured the strong points, and the column advanced to George do Limpopo. The town was rapidly overrun, and Murphy learned that the main Zanla base had been moved to Mapai. The commando company at Medulo Pan was brought forward to secure George do Limpopo, and the column turned west to attack Mapai. The assault element moved toward Mapai without incident until it reached the airfield on the outskirts of the city. A large force of Frelimo and Zanla elements were all well dug in. They were also equipped with 61mm mortars and several 14.5mm heavy machine guns. After several hours of intense combat, the Zanla and Frelimo forces were driven from the airfield, and a subsequent attack pushed them from the city. So as you'll see, these blacks have got lots of weapons, modern weapons, straight from Russia and China. On May 30th, one of the unique elements of this war occurred. Until then, there had been several sharp engagements in which 32 guerrillas had been killed. This had been a good operation, but not necessarily remarkable. Upon entering Mapai, Captain Murphy had captured a vast quantity of Zandla arms and ammunition, and his force had discovered a number of Zandla vehicles. Captain Murphy requested and received Dakota aircraft at the Mapai airfield to return the arms and ammunition to Rhodesia. So let me just explain this. This is a classic case in warfare of you are busy fighting and you come across arms, ammunition, weapons, vehicles, and you grab the stuff. If you're struggling with finances, etc., you grab what you can get. The Germans did the same. The Germans were using Russian tanks. The Germans were capturing all kinds of weapons from anybody they fought against. And it's critical. In most warfare, you're going to struggle for vehicles, for ammunition, for weapons. I assure you that most armies do not function the way the American army does, with massive budgets. You grab what you can, and those items are very important. So when Captain Murphy found all these, this entire bonanza of arms and ammunition and even vehicles, he decided, you know, let's grab this stuff and get it back into Rhodesia. We can use this. So the aircraft also brought several teams of mechanics and drivers trained and equipped for the specific mission of repairing and returning the captured Zandla and Soviet vehicles to Rhodesia. So the white guys may have to repair the vehicles that these blacks have got and get them going. At 2000 hours, that's 8 p.m. in the evening, May 30th, the last Dakota was leaving the Mapai airfield when it was struck with an RPG-7 rocket. The passengers and most of the crew survived the crash. At first light on May 31st, an Air Force salvage team flew to the airfield by helicopter and retrieved every piece of serviceable equipment prior to the final destruction of the plane. The retrieval of this equipment was considered such a high priority that the entire combat operation halted until this mission had been completed. This is just because Rhodesia is struggling. We've got so few weapons, and we've got to look after every piece of everything that we've got. My brother even told me, my brother used to spend 6 months of the year in the army. My brother even told me that towards the end of the war, that when they had been in a contact, a battle with black terrorists, the white soldiers had to walk around in the bush picking up the cartridges because the country was so short of everything. So he said to me, the Rhodesian army must be the only army in the world where the soldiers go after the battle and they walk around picking up their own cartridges so that they can be reused. So that'll give you an idea of the struggle. But even so, we did good. On May 31st, the column returned to George Dolimpopo. At this point, Murphy was told to prepare for withdrawal because of the international pressure being placed on Rhodesia by the United States and the Republic of South Africa. By the way, let me just pause and return to a previous point. The plane that was shot down by a RPG-7. It's a rocket-propelled grenade, and it's a Soviet weapon that's designed to shoot armor. But clearly, some blacks had managed to get close to the airfield and had used the RPG-7 to hit the plane. We lost quite a few planes and helicopters in our war, and every aircraft that we lost was a big loss. So this is a big loss to lose even a little Dakota. For us, it was a huge loss. But these are the risks that you take. There's no such thing as functioning without risk. So anyway, returning to May the 31st, at this point, Murphy was told to prepare for withdrawal because of the international pressure being placed on Rhodesia by the United States and the Republic of South Africa. So now Rhodesia's in big trouble because South Africa is our only source of petrol, of arms, of ammunition, of anything. It's our only lifeline. And if South Africa tells us we can't continue, then we've got to call it a day. But listen to this, because you're going to see what Murphy gets up to. Although the military was told to anticipate this order, it had not yet been given. Hence, the column commander was ordered to move an additional 20 kilometers south of George Do Limpopo and destroy as much of the railway as possible within the limitations of that distance. So they're saying to Murphy, listen, go and see if you can destroy another 20 kilometers of railway and anything you can lay your hands on. Destroy as much of the stuff in this black country as you can, but don't go further than 20 kilometers. But Murphy decides, screw this, he's going to do something else. Captain Murphy turned south, but disregarded the restrictions on his movement. He moved to Mabalan, which was 200 kilometers from George Do Limpopo. So Captain Murphy says, screw this, and he just goes, and for the next 200 kilometers, he bashes up and destroys every damn thing he can lay his hands on. He's busy fucking these blacks up, six love, this American. And the paper continues, it says, during this movement, he destroyed a number of railroad bridges and stations. Upon reaching Mabalan, he discovered the only railway steam crane in Mozambique. His unit destroyed it. So the blacks have only got this one steam crane in the entire country, and he goes and blows it up. It is interesting that this crane was replaced in a matter of months by the Republic of South Africa. The column turned north and moved through light resistance toward the Rhodesian border. The operation ended on June 2, 1977. So this is really a bummer. After these guys, headed by Captain Murphy, have gone on this fight and they've been blowing up everything, destroying everything that they can lay their hands on that can harm the blacks and harm their economy and stop them from bringing in more terrorists, the South African government actually comes and buys them a new crane and replaces something that was the only one of its kind and replaces it for free for the blacks. So this is the apartheid government. Now, this to me illustrates the problems that South Africa faced. That South Africa itself was trying very hard as part of its own strategy. It was trying very, very hard to stay on good terms with America. South Africa went to unbelievable lengths, in my view, to stay on the good side of America. And there is even a paper that I've read, also written by an American military officer, where he talks about the British and the Americans viewing South Africa as the regional power. And they sort of delegate to South Africa, you know, do this and do that. That is within the interests of the West. And South Africa does all these things, only later to be screwed itself. And this is just to give you an idea of the politics. The politics is screwing things up. And this is a recurring theme in the wars in Southern Africa, is the politics is screwing stuff up. Sometimes the economics is also screwing it up, but politics is really cocking it up for the whites big time. And it happens everywhere. Later on, South Africa ends up fighting a whole war in Angola, a war that actually is not really needed, a war that is actually America's idea. And they actually even protect blacks in order to follow America's strategy. And they do a whole bunch of heavy, heavy stuff. And in the end, there are white guys who've gone from South Africa, fought there, done all these things at America's behest and the CIA's behest, and how does it help the South Africans in the end? In the end, they get screwed. The other reason why the South Africans probably replaced this crane is because by then the Jew, Henry Kissinger, had already come to Africa, and he was already screwing with the politics of Rhodesia and South Africa. And he was fooling the South African Prime Minister into thinking that he could make friends with all the black countries. And even P.W. Botha, who later was the most hardcore guy in Southern Africa, in South Africa, even he never quite got rid of that desire to be on good terms with the blacks. It cost South Africa a lot, and in the end bought the whites of South Africa absolutely nothing. And it's one of these sad things that comes out of it, but these are the lessons we must learn. So anyway, closing off, the final evaluation of this operation was summarized by Lieutenant Colonel Daly as follows. The total kills achieved on the operation was never accurately ascertained, but even the minimum figures were in excess of 60. The major achievements had not been kills. Let me just switch to there. Here you can see the layout of the forces as summarized on Wikipedia. The major achievements had not been kills. It had been the final elimination of the Mozambique Railway in the Gaza province. The province inside Mozambique was called Gaza. Along which the Zanda terrorists, their equipment and stores, had been moving to the Rhodesian border. The destruction or capture of a large number of military vehicles being used for the same purposes, and the capture of a vast quantity of terrorists' war material. So in this raid, the whites say that they killed at least 60. One of the things that you'll find in our battles in Southern Africa is that the blacks vastly and wildly overestimate how many whites they kill, and you know, they vastly try to lie about their performance in battle. The whites, however, like whites everywhere, are focused on accuracy. So the whites are very careful when they count deaths. They need to make sure that if they say they killed 60, that it really was 60. And they are very pedantic over battle casualties and claiming kills. They don't go and wildly claim things. So most of the time when they give numbers, those numbers are either exactly accurate or they killed more. But in this case, killing 60 terrorists was not the issue. The issue was destroy the railway line, destroy all the equipment, damage the camps, and on top of it, they managed to seize a vast quantity of arms, ammunition, and vehicles. So this was a raid to destroy infrastructure. And later there were other, even bigger operations to destroy infrastructure, not only in Mozambique, but in Zambia. The raids to kill large numbers of blacks were very successful, but the raids to destroy infrastructure were perhaps even more successful. And these are among the most important lessons that can be learned from these wars in Southern Africa, especially the Rhodesian ones. Rhodesia went out eventually to smash the Zambian and Mozambican economies, and they broke them down. They absolutely smashed those countries' ability to function. And that's important. You can't have your enemy just sitting there and they're not getting pounded. Towards the end, they were pounding the enemies, regardless of the negatives. But as you can see, there was a reluctance to do these things because they were afraid of all the pressure that's constantly coming from America and Britain. America and Britain played a nuisance role in always standing up for the blacks. And the whites really were in a desperate situation and needed to start hitting hard. and it wasn't possible. But anyway, as you can see, Captain John Murphy, an American who commanded a flying column, and he had to function without air support except if in extreme difficulties. There are more accounts of the battles that go into a lot more detail. This is a much higher level view of it, but it'll give you an idea of what the American Captain John Murphy got up to. He was busy pounding the living shit out of these blacks, and he even disregarded the orders of his Rhodesian commanding officers. And how awesome is that? He really went and he banged them up as much as he could. So a true white hero in Southern Africa. And nobody even knows the guy's name. So I'll try and find out more about Captain John Murphy. If I get anything, I'll post it. But a true white racial brother who's come to Africa to help us. And he did everything he could within his ability until he died. And the French were also pretty cool. The French pulled off some amazing stuff for us. And maybe I'll revisit the French and Rhodesia and South Africa. You'll be astounded what the French have done. The country that helped the whites of Southern Africa the most was France. The French helped us like crazy. And we had quite a few other friends. Portugal was always a friend. Spain was friendly. Italy, I think, was friendly to South Africa. We had quite a few friends in Europe. We got more help from Europe than anywhere else. The Anglo-American world, Britain and America, did not assist us ever at any point in time. Ever. That's true for Rhodesia. That's true for South Africa. But France and European countries were the main ones who assisted us in our wars here. And that's been kept quite a secret, but the fact is that it's Europe and Europeans who helped us the most, except in the case for volunteers like Captain John Murphy and other Americans who came to fight here. So that'll give you a little bit of an insight into race war in Southern Africa. We had 50 years of it. We had lots of race war. We know all about fighting these non-whites. There's a lot we can tell the rest of you. And don't you worry about losing your countries. You're going to get them back. Even if you are less than 50%, you're going to get them back easily. Your main problem is Jewish influence on whites in your country. That is the main thing that's blocking all of you from winning. As usual, Jews seeing to it that white people do not win and that blacks win. Big story. It's a big and important story. Just a final note about this particular operation. If you look at the Wikipedia page, it says that in terms of casualties and losses, it says on the Rhodesian side, 2 killed, and on the side of the blacks, 60 plus killed. And then it says in terms of vehicles destroyed, we lost that aircraft, and we destroyed 6 vehicles of the blacks. I suspect that of the 2 killed on our side, that at least one of them was killed in that aircraft crash. The thing which I always watch, and which whites should always be watching, is the ratio of dead on our side to the ratio of dead on the enemy side. In this case, the ratio is more than 30 to 1. In other words, for every one white guy killed, there were more than 30 killed on the enemy side. This is very important, especially when you are vastly outnumbered, and this pertains to those of you in Europe and America who fear race war. As a general rule in Africa, I think the Portuguese, as a general rule, were able to kill at least in the ratio of 6 to 1. In other words, 6 enemy for the loss of one of their soldiers. But in Rhodesia, South Africa, and Southwest Africa, where we had the benefit of learning from the Portuguese, our kill ratios were much higher. We were easily able to kill
15 of the enemy for every one white guy who was killed. Easily 15 to 1. But there were many periods of time where for long periods of time we could kill 18 and even 20 to 1 and sometimes even a bit higher over long, long periods of time. This particular operation is therefore quite exceptional in having a kill ratio of over 30 to 1. This is the highest I've ever seen. And since they don't know exactly how many blacks they killed, it could be quite in excess of 30 to 1. But that will give you an idea of white soldiers versus non-white soldiers when you've got the correct setup and the guys are well trained and you are fighting properly. So don't be intimidated by numbers. Ratios such as 5 to 1, that's nothing. 10 to 1 gets a bit tougher. But anything up to 5 to 1 is a piece of cake for most whites. So don't be intimidated by being outnumbered 2 to 1 or 3 to 1 or 4 to 1. This is nothing. Whites can handle it with total ease. These are my websites, historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.